Thank you, Jeremy and Holly. Thank you for being with us. It's good to have all of you with us. Again, as Mike said, we had a great week at Vacation Bible School. I think the numbers are in your bulletin. Friday night, if you missed Friday night, you missed an absolutely wonderful, wonderful time. So, and if you weren't here, you can probably find it on Facebook. There are any number of people who will share a video with you of what took place Friday night after our family night. But thank you so much, because our children, along with some other wonderful donations, we raised $1,197 to send to our missionaries, Leanne and Allie, in Africa to buy canopies for their primary school, as well as other supplies and a uniform. So while the boys were winners of the money contest, the real winners are the children over in Mozambique. So thank you so much for supporting them and helping them in that effort. Well, this morning we're going to be talking about making marriage work, and you'll understand why here in just a moment. But I read about a couple who was living on a farm, and they were discussing their plans to celebrate their 40th anniversary dinner that night, and they wanted something quiet at home, no big fancy dinner at a restaurant. They wanted something quiet at home, and the wife asked her husband, "Well, shall I kill a chicken for tonight?" And the man thought for a moment and said, "No, why blame a bird for something that took place 40 years ago?" You know, back when Belva and I started dating, like so many of you, there was no internet. There was no Craigslist. Now people use the internet for virtually everything. I read of one woman who placed an ad on the internet that simply read, "Husband wanted." The next day, she received over 100 replies, all of which said, "You can have mine." As we close down our You Asked For series this morning, I'm going to use this morning as an opportunity to kind of springboard and introduce a new short three-part series that will begin today and then pick back up when I get back home from California, and it will lead up to the start of school. And the series will simply be called Making Family Work. And the reason I started this series today is because it is in response to one of your questions in our You Asked For It series. I don't know who submitted the question. I didn't know who submitted many of the questions. Some of them I did, some of them I did not, and this one I do not. But the question was simply this, and I put it down here verbatim. The question is as follows. What I would like to hear about is how a man and a woman who are married should have time for themselves to strengthen their relationship and then have time with their kids as a complete family, and that the husband and wife are servants unto God and to find things as a family to do that are not sinful and have fun doing those things and to go to church each week as a family, not only Sunday, but keep God in your life every day of the week. Now, that's a very good question. That's a very good topic for a sermon series, but it's a whole lot to get into one message, and I fear if I tried to address all that is in this question this morning before leaving to drive to California after church, Belva may be like the woman who responded, who got the responses on the internet, "You can have my husband." So I'm going to shorten it down. We're going to deal with husbands and wives this morning, and then, of course, the Sunday right after we get back, we'll be having our 100th anniversary, 100th birthday celebration for Clovis Phillips. And then the next 2 weeks after that, we'll deal with issues of family in general, as well as parenting. So come back and stay tuned for all of that. In just a few weeks, in fact, the day we arrive back home from California, Belva and I will celebrate 34 years of marriage, and I know that is a drop in the bucket to some people who are coming up on, did you say 69 in January? So that's a drop in the bucket. But I think that I feel like I've learned a thing or two over the years about marriage. At least I hope I have. I hope I have learned a thing or two about parenting and about family issues in general. I would like to think that I can now speak with a little bit of authority. I was telling Lois this morning, she was saying, so I'm going to, after 69 years, I'm going to find out how to make my marriage work. And I told her, well, you could probably preach this message better than I could. And she said, no, not really. We're all in process. We're all just learning to have good marriages. But I think the real experts on marriage this morning are the first couple, Adam and Eve. Their marriage was simple. Their ceremony was very understated, if you will. We'll look at their marriage vows this morning. But just consider why I say Adam and Eve make the perfect example of how to make a marriage work. They had no example to follow. You know, they could not look to their parents on what worked and didn't work in marriage. They had no example to follow. They had no premarital counseling to attend. They had no model to pattern their marriage after. They truly had to know how to make it on their own, literally. They couldn't borrow money from mom and dad when things got tight. They could not move back home when they got kicked out of their home with literally nothing but the clothes on their back. They couldn't do that. And to top it all off, they had some major, major family issues. They had the whole blame game going on in their family with she made me do it. They were the first to experience family drama and dysfunction like we have never seen before in our lives, as their sons went down in history as having the first ever family feud that left one son dead and the other one literally running for his life. And yet, listen to this, and yet, through all of this and so much more, Adam and Eve stayed together. Jim and Lois are coming up on 69 years. Adam and Eve stayed together for close to 1,000 years of married life. Can you even imagine? Now, some have said that there are three stages of marriage. The first is the ideal stage. That is the stage where everyone is excited and love is grand and new and fresh, and our marriage is going to be different and our marriage will last a lifetime stage. The next stage is the ordeal stage. We move from ideal to ordeal. The ideal has become an ordeal. This is when we realize that Prince Charming is perhaps more of a toad than Prince Charming, where Sleeping Beauty is not nearly as lovely once she wakes up in the morning. And then sadly, we move from ideal through the ordeal, and sometimes we begin looking for a new deal in marriage. But I would challenge you that sometimes a new deal can take place right in our existing marriage if we are willing to do what Adam and Eve were willing to do. Now, as I said, their marriage ceremony was very simple. If you think about it, God was the solo guest, minister, and witness. And chances are you have heard these words in some form or fashion in your marriage ceremony or in countless other marriage ceremonies that you have attended. So let's consider the three steps of marriage when the Bible says this is why a man leaves his father and mother in Genesis 2:24 and bonds with his wife and they become one flesh. First off, to make your marriage work, you must leave. You must leave. Let's set the record straight right now. When Scripture says to leave, that doesn't mean leave the marriage. but you must learn to leave some things behind. What does it say to Adam and Eve? It says that they are to leave. They are to leave their what? Father and mother, which is really kind of interesting that God would say that, because they had no earthly father and mother. And yet, God knew that in the coming generations, there would be this tendency for parents and children to hang on to each other. And the Lord said in His divine sovereignty, you must leave your parents. But not only must you leave your parents, but parents, you must learn to leave your children. That is just as difficult and just as painful as it is for children to leave their parents. Adam and Eve were the only couple who never wrestled or struggled with leaving home. And maybe for you it wasn't a struggle. Maybe it was a race out the door because things were that bad. I don't know. But parents, and more today, even grandparents, I can't stress this enough. You have to let your children leave. That is what you have raised them to do. You have raised them to leave. You have to let your children leave, make them stand on their own. You must love them always, but sometimes you must love them from a distance. I've told you before, I think, how my mother told me I'd lived at home, moved down to Southern California to begin my college and get a job, and I had this old beater of a car, and it broke down in the middle of the intersection on Long Beach Boulevard. And I pushed it out of the intersection onto the curb, got home. No cell phones. Imagine that. How did we ever live? Got home, called my mom to tell her what a horrible situation I was in. And she said, that's the situation. What are you going to do about it? What do you mean, what am I going to do about it? She said, I could send you the money, but I'm not going to. You need to figure this out. It's hard to let our children leave. And I'm not, you may, I'm not saying that we shouldn't help them out every once in a while if we need to, but we need to love them from a distance. The best definition, and I really believe this, the best definition I ever heard of parenting is teaching your children to leave. Teaching your children to leave. That is what we shoot for. That is our aim. That is our goal. That is what we train them for, to leave and to live life on their own or with their spouse. But listen, parents, you have just such a very short period of time with your kids. A very short period of time. That is why training them when they are young is so vitally important. Our job is to prepare them to leave. But do you realize that by the time your children, listen to this, by the time your child is 12 years old, two-thirds of your time with them is done. At just 12 years old. And so by the time your child is making decisions about who she will date, by the time your son is making decision on who he will mate with and who he will marry, your job, for all practical purposes, is done. It is too late to begin having those conversations then with your child. You begin early on. That's why the Bible tells us to train up a child in the way he should go. There are absolutely no guarantees on what way they are going to go. That is that verse in Proverbs, to train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from him. That is not a promise. That is a most likely. It is not a guarantee. If there is one thing I have learned through my years as a parent, as well as through my years of pastoring, when it comes to raising our children, there are no guarantees on how they will turn out. That's why you do your best as much as you can and as quickly as you can when they are young. Because by the time they start making a decision on who they're going to date and who they are going to marry, it does not matter what you say. It is too late to come in and be the rescue team. It's already done. Take the time now. Give them everything you can, as often as you can, as early as you can, as long as it is age appropriate. There is no conversation you should not be able to have with your child, as long as it is age appropriate. And that's a word to parents. You have to let your children leave, no matter how hard it is, no matter how much it hurts. We train them up to leave. But let me say a word to couples and to children. Understand that your mother and your father love you. And I will assume that you love them. But listen, when you marry, both of you, parents and children, when you marry, both of you need to sever the emotional, financial, and physical apron strings. Again, it does not mean that you don't love your children. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be there if you really need to be there. I think my mother did a great job in raising me. I am the only one of four children that left and never came back home. And my mother told me this when I left. She says, Clay, I love you. This is what I raised you to leave. And if something happens and you have to come back, that's okay, but you need to understand this, Clay. This will never be home again. This is no longer home. If the bottom falls out and you have to, you can come back, but it is not home. This is temporary. And so we have to sever the ties. But that doesn't mean that you don't ever hang out with mom and dad, or mom and dad, you don't ever hang out with your kids. I absolutely love the relationship I have with my two grown children and their spouses. I love having them over, and I love when they leave. You know, Justin, y'all know Justin came back for a little bit, and it was nice, but we were really glad to have an empty nest again. We like our life. And I love the relationship, and it's wonderful, but they need to get your children need to get their support from one another, not from mom and dad. They need to get their support from their spouses. They need to learn to lean on their spouse for support. They need to figure out how to live life together as a couple. And again, that doesn't mean that you don't offer advice, but only when it is asked for. One of the worst things you can do as a parent is to give unsolicited advice to your children. That will drive a wedge almost faster than anything. Justin and Melissa have been looking at houses, and we have been so blessed because they've asked us to go along with them, to look with them. And we are very careful what we say. And every once in a while, I will say permission to speak freely. And they would say yes. And then we would tell them, okay, this is what we really think. But you've got to figure it out on your own. You have to find out how to make it work between the two of you in any and every situation. But because don't expect young couples, don't expect your parents to continue to raise you. And parents, don't think it is your job to continue to raise your children. It's not. You always love them, you always worry about them, but you don't always raise them. One time, and only one time, I remember, did Belva and I ever borrow money from our parents. And I'll tell you what, we didn't We didn't eat out. We didn't buy anything extra until we had that money paid back. Because it was just that, it was a loan. It was not a gift. And we were told that. Because it was our job to figure out how to make it work. You need to leave mom and dad. And parents, you need to allow and encourage your children to leave. But not only, listen to this, this is important as well. But not only do you need to learn to leave the nest, but you need to learn to leave your friends as well. You need to leave mom and dad, but you also need to leave your friends. I have had quite a few husbands and wives over the years come to me complaining that they feel like they married their spouse and all of their friends. Because 2-3 nights a week, he was out with the boys. Or 2-3 nights a week, she was out with the girls. That is a recipe for disaster in your marriage. I'm telling you. It is a recipe for disaster. There is nothing wrong with having a guy's night out or a girl's weekend from time to time. But listen, the bulk of your time needs to be spent with your spouse. Regardless. So you need to learn to get along with them. You need to learn to be friends with them and to have a good time with them. Just this past week, I think it was Tuesday night, Belva went to see the movies with one of her friends from work, and I encourage her to get together with her friends from work if she wants to. The thing is, she doesn't ever want to. And she said, I know I can go any time. She says, but there is no one I would rather spend time with than you. I want to do things with you. And that's how it needs to be in a marriage. There should be no one else you would rather want to spend time with than that person you said I do to. To the person who's wearing the ring. Your friends aren't wearing the ring. Your spouse is wearing the ring. And so you need to remember that. And that's the way it should be. You leave the nest. You leave your friends. But perhaps most importantly of all, you leave mom and dad. You leave your friends. But you also leave yourself. If you're going to make your marriage work, you need to learn to leave yourself. Marriage is not a 50-50 partnership. I don't know whoever came up with that idea, but it is garbage. Marriage is not a 50-50 partnership. It is not meeting halfway. Marriage is going all the way. Marriage is each person giving 100% of themselves up. That's what makes a marriage work. Belva gives 100% up to me, and I give 100% up to her. She doesn't give 150, and I don't give 50. You have to be willing to give up 100% of yourself. Listen to what the Apostle Paul says. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, he said, "Do nothing out of rivalry or conceit, but in humility consider others as more important than ourselves. Everyone should look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." You know what that looks like? What that is called in marriage? It's called love. It's called submission. I remember years ago, early on in my ministry, I had a couple come to me and ask me if I would do their wedding for them, and I said yes. And they went through counseling, and during one of our sessions, we were actually talking about the logistics of the ceremony itself. The young lady looked at me and she said, "You're not going to use the submit word, are you?" I said, "Yes, I am." Submit is not a dirty word. It's a biblical word. What has made it a dirty word is how we have distorted submission. You see, submission is all about each person giving themselves up. And that's what Paul says at the end of that passage in Ephesians. He said, each one should submit to the other. You see, when Belva gives up 100% of her rights to me, and when I give up my 100% of my rights to her, then we are both mutually cared for. I meet you halfway. It's I meet you all the way. Even when I don't like it, even when it is not convenient, I meet you all the way. when both husband and wife give up 100% of themselves and leave themselves at the altar and do everything for their mate, then both husband and wife are mutually and lovingly cared for. Some couples don't understand this concept in marriage. They think it is all about them. I read about one man who decided he was going to be the head of his household. He was the man. He was in charge, and so he told his wife that he was going to rule the roost. He told his wife, from now on, I want you to know that I am the head of this house, and what I say goes. And I want you to prepare me a gourmet meal every night when I come home from work. And I want you to prepare me a scrumptious dessert after that. And after dinner, I want you to draw my bath water. And then after that, guess who is going to dress me and comb my hair without missing a beat? The wife said, the undertaker is my guess. It's not about you. It's about her. Or it's about him. This leaving mom and dad and friends as well as yourself leads to the next step of making marriage work. You must leave, and then you must cleave. You must cleave to one another. You leave your parents and they leave you. You leave your friends and you even leave yourself at the altar. But you don't leave your spouse. God told Adam and Eve to bond with each other. The Old King James Version and even the New American Standard Bible uses the word cleave. And I love that word. The word means to cling like glue. In other places in the Bible, it is used to describe skin clinging to the bone. Basically, it means to be permanently attached. You see, and this is really important to understand, because you don't cleave to mom and dad. You don't cleave to your friends. You don't cleave to your job. Nowhere in the Bible, there's only one relationship that is told to cleave to one another, and that is husband and wife. And get this, I know this is a hard pill for some of us to swallow. We're not even called to cleave to our children or our grandchildren. We are called only to cleave to our spouse. Stick like glue on them. I heard of one father who took a very hard and serious stance on marriage. He told his children from an early age that if they ever married a non-Christian, that he would neither pay nor attend the wedding. That's a hard word. And one of his daughters ended up marrying a nice young man, but he was not a saved man. He wasn't a Christian man. And so, true to his word, this father stayed home from the wedding as much as it broke his heart, and he did not attend his daughter's wedding. And on the way out of town for their honeymoon, the couple stopped by to see the father. The father got up. He hugged his daughter. And he hugged his new son-in-law. And he told them this: I fought hard to keep you apart, but I want you to know that I will fight even harder to keep you together. And that's the way it has to be. We cleave to one another. You may or may not agree with that philosophy, but that's what it means to be married, to cleave to one another, to stick like glue to one another. Now, that being said, I understand, and please hear me on this, I understand that sometimes that just doesn't happen. And I am not here to make anyone feel guilty at all, because even the Lord knew that some marriages don't last. In fact, that's why Jesus said, but what did Jesus say? Jesus said, because of the hardness of your heart, God made a provision for divorce. It's never his choice. It's never his first option, but that's not his favorite option. But sometimes one spouse or the other, their heart becomes so hard that marriage is just not marriage anymore. But what the Lord really wants us to understand, and this is important, what the Lord really wants us to understand is that there is no trial marriages. There are no trial marriages. When we get married, we marry with the long view. Or we should marry with the long view. We must enter marriage with the long view. We must realize that tough times will come. We must realize that money will be short. We must realize that children will stay and children will stray and children will eventually leave. That arguments and disagreements and sometimes even fights will happen. But we must enter marriage understanding that it is always hard work and that we don't cut and run from troubled waters. We have to learn to cleave to one another. And if marriage is going to work, we must leave our family, we must leave our friends and ourselves, and then learn to stick with each other. And when we do that, the final stage of marriage begins to develop and happens slowly over time. The first thing we do is we must learn to leave. The second thing we do is we must learn to cleave. The third thing that takes the rest of our marriage is that we must learn to weave our lives together. To weave. Notice what God said in verse 24 of Genesis. This is why a man leaves his father and mother and bonds with his wife, and they become one flesh. That's a very interesting word usage that God uses. They become one flesh. Notice what God didn't say. He didn't say they became one flesh, as though it had already happened. They become. Over time, they become one flesh. Almost always, at almost every single wedding ceremony I've ever done, I say something to the effect that, and today you begin the process of becoming one flesh. Because it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen immediately. When you say, I do, you are only beginning to become one flesh. God was telling Adam and Eve to hang in there, to wait it out, to push through. As best we can tell, Adam and Eve were married close to 900 years. And they were not all good years. That's a whole lot of weaving going on. It's a whole lot of things going on. One survey I ran across said that 84% of women feel that they don't have intimacy or oneness in their marriage. In the same survey, the majority of divorcees stated that their married years were some of the loneliest years of their lives. Men, if we loved our wives like we love ourselves, like the Bible tells us, instructs us to in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28, this would not happen. Hear me on this, men. The responsibility for intimacy and oneness, not sex, but for intimacy and oneness is on us. It is not on our wives. It is on us. Now, I don't know why God did that. I don't like the fact that God did that, but that is what God did. We are wired totally different. Men and women are wired totally different. Intimacy to women mean sit here and talk to me. Be close to me. Don't tell me all the answers that I need to know. Just listen to me. Intimacy and oneness for men, well, you know what that means. Enough said. We are totally different. And the sooner we learn that, and some of us have not yet learned that, the sooner we learn that, the better our marriage will work. Is there time for physical relationship? Yes, and there needs to be. But it's not always. It's not always. By the way, how many of you have taken the time to read Song of Solomon's yet this week? Did you see my devotion the other day? Husbands and wives, you need to go back and read Song of Songs. And you need to learn to flirt together again. And you need to learn to talk with each other and make each other feel good and compliment each other. That will make a marriage work. Get creative, and I'll leave it there. God's plan for couples is become one flesh. And this means more than sharing a checking account. It means more than sharing the bedroom and the bathroom and the children. It means sharing your time and your lives together, your thoughts together. The comedian Rodney Dangerfield once said that he and his wife sleep in separate rooms. They have dinner apart. They take separate vacations because they're doing everything they can to make their keep their marriage together. And that would really be funny if it weren't so true and weren't so sad. You can't weave a life together if you never spend more than a few hours a week together. You just can't do it. You just can't do it. Why would you want to be married to someone that you don't want to spend time with? And I hear it all the time. Well, they weren't like that when we got married. Well, love can be blind sometimes, and we have to learn to work through it. Making marriage work is possible. Hear me on this. Making marriage work is possible. It is not quick. It is not always easy. But it is always rewarding. It may not be quick. It may not be easy. But it is always rewarding. So as we close, let me give you two quick reminders as we rethink the whole leave, cleave, and weave stage of marriage. First thing. This is very important. First thing. Remember that no marriage is perfect. Not a single one of them. There is no marriage that is perfect. The closest anyone has ever come was Adam and Eve, and everyone knows what happened there. Right? You are an imperfect person who married another imperfect person. So don't expect to have a perfect marriage. One imperfect person marrying another imperfect marriage does not make a perfect marriage. It makes an imperfect marriage. And that's okay. You need to work for a good marriage. You need to work for a great marriage. You need to work towards a wonderful marriage. You need to work towards a fun marriage. It can really be all of that and much more. And I believe God wants that for all marriages. But listen, you will never have a perfect marriage, because neither one of you are perfect. Second thing to remember, you must realize that success in marriage is not about finding the right person. Success in marriage is about being the right person in your marriage. Okay? One woman wrote into Dear Abby, and she said, "Dear Abby, I'm single, 40 years old, and I'd like to meet a man about the same age with no bad habits." Dear Abby wrote back, "So would I." You're just not going to find the perfect right person. So stop trying to make the other person change and be the right person, and you just start being the right person. Just, you know what? You know what would really help all of our marriages? If we would be the person we would want to be married to. Just be the type of person you want to be married to. And it will make a world of difference. So the choice is yours. And I'm going to get to go to California with my wife because I'm finishing up early. The choice is yours. I'm not sure if you are in an ideal marriage or an ordeal marriage, or perhaps you're looking for a new deal marriage. But I know this. Whatever you have, you can have a real marriage if you will choose to leave, to cleave, and to weave your lives together as one.